Hey everyone, welcome back to the Growth Signal. I am so excited to introduce you to my brand new friend, Gary. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So as longtime listeners know, we always kind of open up these conversations with one question. We want to hear your origin story. How did you get here? How did you become the person that you are?
I love this question. I love that you framed this as an origin story because I'm a comic book geek. So it makes me feel like a superhero a little bit.
Not going to lie, I stole it from the Avengers. So
that's where I was going with it. So I was not bitten by a radioactive spider. And maybe I'm more like a mutant. I was just born this way. So I did not go to Professor X's School for the Gifted. But listen, I basically started in financial services quite some time ago. And I'll talk a little bit more later about the difference between asset servicing and asset management, maybe. But I started in asset servicing these huge pension clients, the California State Teachers Public Retirement Plan and the California Employees Public Retirement Plan. And these are huge pension funds. They're like, I don't even know what the current numbers are. 40 billion, 400 billion, 300
Insane
billion.
Insane amounts of money.
Insane yes. amounts of money. They were big back then. And that to me was an introduction to client management, relationship management, how important it is to manage relationships, both internal and external, because we manage relationships with their investment managers as well. And they were such huge clients. We had a very unique, dedicated group specifically designed to meet their needs. So that to me was this introduction to how important client relationships are and how important these huge client relationships are and how you can make a difference with a true customer focus and true customer centricity. And that's kind of where I started, but that was such a huge imprint on me that that's where I've been ever since. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I love that you point out the idea of the relationship side of that, right? Because when I think of pensions and asset management of any kind, I do not think of people-to-people relationships. I think of this big, messy, kind of intimidating experience that I call in my more accountant-minded husband to deal with, because I just don't want to deal with it.
It is a lot of relationship building, and it's very complicated. So, I mean, you probably have a 401k, not a traditional pension plan. So I worked a lot. I've worked with both. A traditional pension plan is what you think of, maybe a state teacher. If you're a teacher and you have a traditional defined benefit pension plan, it's called, that is a different way of investing and managing the assets than a 401k, because it's defined contribution. You're making the decisions. You say, here's how much I'm going to put in, and here's what the investments are going to be. You hopefully have some help deciding what those are. But it's the opposite when you have a defined benefit pension plan, right? They're investing the money for you. When you retire, you're going to get whatever the plan says, 75% of your final salary, average of the last 5 years, something like that. That's great because you don't have to worry about it. When you retire, you get paid. Right. It's awesome, right? That's went by the wayside, and it's now more of a 401k defined contribution world that we live in. Well, those you still have to, how do you do that? If you have $400 billion, what are you going to do with it? So
that's a pretty big decision.
There's lots of decisions. So what you do is this goes to equity. This goes to fixed. This goes to alternatives, private equity, hedge funds, all this stuff. So you could have hundreds of investment managers that you're dealing with. So the pension, it could be a company, in which case it's an ERISA plan, has to deal with all those different investment managers. And then their asset servicing, their custodian or trustee. And I've done both sides of this. The people who invest the money is asset management. The people who take care of the assets, like a bank, this is asset servicing. Everybody's got to work together. There's consultants involved. There's actuaries. There's auditors. There's all sorts of fun that you have. Record keepers when it comes to 401k. So it's all relationship driven, and it's very operational, very functional, and there's a lot of room for messing up.
Yeah. I would imagine, though, you're dealing with basically people's livelihoods in some ways. So building that trust, not only with your internal team, right, all those people that you mentioned, and building the trust to know that, hey, when the mess ups do happen, because they will, this is the way that we have relationships with each other. But also the fact that people are expecting this when they retire, and it's kind of a promise that's been made to them. So a high degree of trust with your customers, the actual end recipients of all of this as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what's always motivated me at the end is somebody needs to be paid their retirement money.
Right.
And if you don't, and that's part of asset servicing. Some people will pay, there's called the benefit disbursement agent. And a lot of times my company would do that. you've got to make sure those people are paid and paid on time. That's their paycheck. They're retired. If you goof that up, think about how frustrating that will be. You talk about frustrating experiences. We talk a lot in CX or customer service. We talk about the grocery store being frustrated, right? Mm-hmm. Or with the line or the checkout thing doesn't work. The automated checkout thing doesn't work. Oh, gee, that's a bad experience. You know, I'm going to Trader Joe's next time. Well, not getting your paycheck, right?
Right.
That's not good. And then sometimes it's a big lump sum payment. And so there are real people at the end of this, and it's real money. And the goal is to pay your retirees at the end of the day. Now, some of the money is endowment money, universities, but that's also important too, because it's educational money. It could be buildings and scholarships and all sorts of good stuff that the universities do.
Yeah.
Again, those are large sums of money. And, you know, some people wonder what they do with it all, but there are a lot of people working really hard to make sure that these that the money is invested soundly, and that the people who get benefit from the money are getting the benefit from the money. So it's important stuff.
It is. And having that customer relationship too, as you're thinking through it, like think about your customer base, right? A lot of these retirees may not have the wherewithal in today's digital world to follow up when something does go wrong.
Right.
My husband is a CPA, and he's talking right now about they just passed some executive order or something like that, that all payments to and from the IRS and Social Security and Medicaid will be electronic now.
Really?
And so like he's already anticipating having to deal with his lovely little old lady client who has only ever written paper checks and doesn't have that system set up. So it's interesting to see, you know, as the world changes, how your customer relationship has to change, because he's rethinking his approach now of how he talks to his customers, because they're going to have to change the way that they've quote unquote done business for the last 70 years.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I just paid electronically my taxes and I got dinged a really big service fee. So yeah. I wasn't too happy with that experience. However, if I sent a old-fashioned paper check, where are my checks again, honey? Where did I do those things?
Right.
I think they're over there. I don't know, because I don't use them. Well, that would have been free. So I filled out everything electronically and I got dinged with the 2.5%, whatever the heck it was. So it's a little frustrating, but things are definitely changing. But that is interesting that I would think with something like a taxes that you cannot do it. That's kind of hard. That's a hard one to swallow.
I think it's going to be as I was reading something interesting a couple of days ago, and the person who wrote it said something like, you designed the process to benefit you, not to benefit your customer. So when things don't work, look at your process. Is it solely for your benefit or is it for your customer's benefit? And I think that that's one of those moments where people are like, well, it's easier for us to do electronic payments, so therefore that's what we're going to do. And obviously the government's not like worried about customer experience. But I think we see this in companies all the time where they spend so much time designing process and experience around what works for them and what helps them be more efficient rather than what helps them create better customer experiences.
You're exactly right on all points. You said about three things there that I could, let me just take the first one that I want to focus on is the government thing. There are efforts to be much better at it. And I was laughing. I didn't get to talk about this in one of my podcast episodes. About it in depth, but one of the experiences I was really impressed with was I had my old license plates on my car from my original already Saturn SL2. You might not even know what the heck it's Saturn. Were you around for Saturn? I don't know.
I was around for Saturn, but very barely.
Barely, right? But I had an SL2. It was my first car. I had the same plates, and they get dirty, and you can't read them. And I forgot. I'm like, oh, and then pass inspection. I gotta go to the mail. God,
I went.
They were great.
Yeah.
I walk in. It was organized. I got two security guards, big smiles. Hi, how you doing? What do you need today? My plates are really old. Oh, all right. So you're going to go around the corner, go over there, go to 11 over there, and you're good. You're good. You're good. Okay. I'm like, yeah, just ran over. Okay. She was great. She helped, and I had to go back because they didn't come in because there was a bit of delay. And the guy was, they were awesome.
Yeah.
The second thing was I went into Boston, and I did talk about this in one of my podcasts. I went to Boston on the T. And I didn't have my Charlie card. I needed a new one. I used to have to go to the booth to get the Charlie card. Well, they can get it in the machine, but I wasn't sure. But I was like, hey, I need a new one. It expired. Where do I go? I'll help you. He walked over. He did the whole thing for me. Except pay. I had to pay, obviously. And then he said, where are you going? You know, you're going to go down on the right and you do this and you take that to the South Station. And yeah. They were wonderful. So, you know, there are efforts on the side of, public transportation, governments to be a little bit better than they have been in the past. And
Yeah.
it's taking root now. Obviously, this stuff going on again, is that going to impact things? Who knows? And I don't want to get into a political discussion.
No, that's
I
definitely
have half the people turn this thing off. So
that's not what we're here to do for sure.
no,
But I
but.
think there are lessons to be learned from companies about how do you create experiences that people talk about. Here we are talking about your experience at the DMV, right? How can companies have that same experience where their customers or users just want to have that conversation with people simply because there's nothing in it for them other than to share, hey, I had a great experience.
Yeah, true. And then I forgot the other thought. Well, the other you had something else in that. Oh gosh, I totally lost it. What I was going to say, I had something else. But anyway, I'm
That's
sorry.
okay. That we need live replays in these podcasts, right? Roll it back.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. So one of the other things I always love to ask people on this podcast, because I think I always get really interesting responses. So no pressure. What are you working on right now? What is the thing that is lighting up your life, taking all of your attention? What is the thing that you are talking about at cocktail parties?
Actually, it's my podcast.
Yeah, let's hear about it.
So my podcast is Your Customer, Your Success. I launched it in December.
It's fairly fresh then. That's cool.
It is fairly fresh. We are on episode 14.
Okay.
It's all about the world of customer experience, customer success. I'm a little bit of a blend because my background's more of a enterprise customer success manager. But it's taken a lot of my time because I'll be honest with you, I had no idea what I was doing. And I wanted to do it right and do it well. And, I knew it wouldn't be perfect. And we've talked a little bit on my podcast about done is better than perfect. But let me tell you, it's so much that I didn't know the technology, how to do this, how to edit your sound. We were talking before we started about my sound because it's very echoey. And I wanted the sound to look professional and have great guests and have some great conversations. And it's working. And now I do everything myself is the other thing. I edit everything, the sound, the video. I put everything out, my promo clips. And I have fun doing it, but it's a lot of work. So
it is. Yeah. It does get better. So two things. One, just by having more than 10 episodes, you are a top 1% podcast in the world, because most people start a podcast and they do one or two episodes and then they don't become famous overnight. And then they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. On my other podcast, I just hit 50 episodes. And I will tell you that episodes 1 through 10 took me probably 90 minutes to edit a 30-minute episode by the time all was said and done. I can now do a 30-minute episode in 30 minutes or less.
Wow.
So you get a lot faster after you've recorded. I think in total, I've recorded 70 podcast episodes now between the two shows.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah,
I'm glad it is getting faster. To me, it's the promos, the clips, afterwards, it takes a lot of time. I've edited things before. I do videos for my golf society and things like that as well on YouTube. And so I kind of know how to do that and I have fun with it, but it does take some time.
Yeah.
And I did, honestly, I can't even believe I'm saying this. I won an award. I won a top
Woo-hoo!
50. I won a top 50 over 50 podcaster award.
That's awesome.
Hardy House Media last Friday night, they had the ceremony. So that was just, I was like, you're kidding me. So that was wonderful. And I appreciate that and all my guests that have helped out. But that has been like my big thing because I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but I'm so thrilled I've done it.
Yeah, very cool. So you talk about on your podcast, like what are some of the things that really surprised you in those conversations that you learned?
The actual numbers, some of them, when a lot of the stuff you talk about in customer experience, it's fairly common sense. People will say you got to put the customer first and you put your employees first, but they don't always live that, right?
Right.
It's kind of, do you mind if I go Seinfeld on this?
I love it. Let's do it.
I've got 4 Seinfeld references already.
So we've already done episodes. The Avengers. We've done Spider-Man. We got to do Seinfeld now.
So, one of my favorites as far as a business lesson is there's an episode where Kramer has a car full of Titleist golf balls. And he comes in, he bursts through the door, and he goes, Jerry and I'm sorry, George are in there, and he says, who wants to have fun? And they say, I want to have fun. He says, do you really want to have fun, or are you just saying you want to have fun? And Jerry says, I really want to have fun. And George says, I'm just saying I want to have fun. So I feel like a lot of times people in the C-suite or in B2B marketing things, they kind of just say these things
yeah.
and they don't live it. But when you live it, you get these numbers, and the we talk about the ROI. People are the numbers, and these are all like McKinsey and Qualtrics, 3.5 more times more likely to recommend. Customers that are frustrated are, and it depends on what you look at, 4 to 10 times more likely to leave. They're 2.5 more times likely to buy another product, things like that. And so the number and the data are there. And I just don't think it's that hard, but it's some, for some reason, it's hard to sell the ROI of building great customer experiences. And that to me is the
People
conversation
have
we
the
always have.
right, yeah, people have the right intentions, right? We all want to delight our customers because that's the way that we make money, right? And I think you have to have a real honest assessment of what is your intention behind delighting your customers. Is it because you truly believe in the power of a customer-centric experience, or is it because you know it's the right thing to say? And when you don't have those two in alignment, your actual beliefs versus things coming out of your mouth, that disconnect is going to come through, whether it's obvious or not. Like, people are intuitive. They can tell when you're full of shit. Like, come on. They can.
Thank you for saying it.
And how many times have we met people where maybe we can't put our finger on it, but something is just not quite connecting? Something's a
Connecting.
little bit off. People feel that same way about companies. If they get on a sales call with someone who's clearly just like regurgitating the talking points and doesn't have any personality or brand of their own,
Right.
then people can feel that. And whether they know it or not, they see through that kind of conversation.
Yeah, no, and I've lived that, right? Because you say we're investing in technology and we're doing this, we're doing that, and then, but well, the technology isn't that great; it's not helping them. So, how can we help them? You see it all the time because it's all in the marketing things, it's all in the RFP materials or whatever it is. But I've always lived the life of I've got to prove it every day, and
Yeah.
so when you see that disconnect, they sense it. Like the people I work with as clients, they're very smart people. Customers are smart people. People, like you said, are intuitive. They know when you're full of crap,
They do.
and so you go out there. You're not selling it right. Well, no, I'm doing the best I can, and maybe the decisions we've made aren't really working, and we have to rethink what we're doing. Are we really doing it for us or for them? And look, the companies I work for, a lot of times you do have to do things that's best for the company because what's best for the company is best for the client in the end. When you're dealing with actual money and assets, you have to put compliance and risk measures and process and procedures in place to protect the assets and, to be honest with you, protect you from being sued.
Yeah.
Clients would complain all the time about the legal process, and I work with some great lawyers over the years, but we were stickler on the details because we'd get sued all the
Right.
time for stuff that we didn't do wrong. And so when you're doing investment management agreements or investment contracts or trust agreements, you have to be extra careful what it says, because somewhere, somebody at some point is going to come back and try to find something wrong with it where they can get some dough from you. So.
I'm writing up a contract. I was just working on it this morning, and I'm kind of going through all the line items because it's been a while since we've put one out. And I'm going through all the line items, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of intense. And my giver reaction is to be like, well, it's not that important. We'll just, whatever. They want to hire us. We want to work for them, so we'll just go in good faith. But my business owner hat immediately came on and said, you have to do these things to protect yourself, even if you're having the best intentions in the world. It doesn't mean that everybody else does. I mean, I've had to learn that the hard way so many times because I've always worked for small companies. I've worked for startups. I've worked for people who I knew the names of their kids and their dog and what they were doing on the weekends, and we all knew each other. But when I started consulting for some big companies, I wasn't prepared for the politics and the games that happen because I just had never experienced that before. So I got blindsided a couple of times just because I was naive that there was a game underfoot.
Yeah, there is. And but the thing is, you often have you don't know who's going to be looking at that contract 5 or 10 years from now, because people change, the people you're working with might change, the company ownership might change, and you don't know who from a legal perspective is going to look at it if somebody decides to sue you for something years down the road. Because a lot of the contracts I've dealt with, they were 20 years old. I had one contract I remember it was written on a typewriter, right? So it was that old. And so things change, and you have to be careful. And is that a pleasant experience? No. But do you have to put your customers through it? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if you're really clear about your like the intent, right, is to protect me and to protect you. Inside this contract is confidentiality clauses to make sure that I don't divulge anything that, you know, you wouldn't want me to say, and just really makes it all clear of what's going on and how we're going to go forward. But open, transparent communication can really make all the difference in that.
Yeah, and early communication of that stuff.
No surprises. And
no surprise. I am glad you said that. That is one of my favorite sayings, because I had a manager who was the head of client service at one point that had a sign behind his desk that simply said,
and surprises. Oh my God. Okay. We did not script that or plan that.
Right there.
That's incredible.
I brought a prop for you, but
I love it.
So I was just talking to somebody, I was talking to a client of mine about that the other day, that is our goal. No surprises, right? So get out in front of it, whether it's an operational change or the legal process. And that, you know, to be honest with you, here's a tip for you. If you've got a complicated contract, don't forget I've dealt with government contracts, right? So state and municipality contracts. Do it as part of the sales process. Now, some people are going to say, oh, God, you'll never win the sale that way. Well, then you win the sale and you can't get through the legal agreement. So what
right.
the
it doesn't
the
matter if you can't get through. If you win the sale but can't get through procurement, you got nothing.
Right. So, you know, there's a tip for you. If you find, you know, yourself in a situation where you're going to have a long legal process, it's a complicated contract, get it out front. Get it out front and make that part of the discussion so you don't fall on your face. Hey, we won, and then you're in trouble.
Yeah. And I think no surprises in general is just a good motto to have for your employees, for yourself, for your customers, right? Because the signals are out there for everything that we're all trying to do. If you can just like look up and say, okay, that seems like something I need to be paying attention to, right? Look up from your phone for a minute and look around into the world and say, do I have all of the information I need to have no surprises?
Right. And so it's, like I said, it's operational. It's product, it's legal, it's risk, it's compliance, but it's also your employees. There should never be a surprise on a performance review. That's for sure. There should, you know, and the other thing, there are surprises. You can't say no surprises sometimes with employees because things happen. Certainly layoffs are one of them, and layoffs happen. But, you know, there are certain things that, and changes come along for companies and for the employees. One thing I've learned actually through my podcast is a great thing to think about is when you're a leader, you know of those changes ahead of time, right? You've had time to digest it. You might have been talking about this change for a few weeks or whatever it is, a couple months. When you put it out in front of your employees, your team, give them that same time to digest. Maybe not the entire same time, but when you tell them something and they're not quite accepting of it the next day, think about how much time you've had to digest it, because it takes time, right? It's emotion. You go through kind of the and Tim McCleary talked about this on my podcast, amazing stuff. The stages of grief are very similar to the stages of accepting change. And so it's a big change, like people are getting laid off, and that's never happened in your company before.
Right.
And you
denial, just like, anger.
It's the same stuff. So let them go through that process, right? Instead of, you're not on board, you've got to accept this. Change is good. The change should be good, but sometimes it's not. And so you've got to let them have time to accept that change and do maybe a better job of explaining it to them.
To your point, though, I've had leaders before who would pretend like all things were rosy because they didn't want to spook the employees. Right. And I do think that that is a dangerous thing to do, because if you are projecting out into the world. So we agree. No surprises.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should add no preventable surprises, right?
Right.
Like if it's something that doesn't have to be a surprise, then it shouldn't be a surprise. Now, if we have a global disaster, like a global pandemic, and something happens, that's a surprise to a lot of us, and we all had to adapt. But that was very clearly something that you could not really have foreseen. But a layoff, if you've had three bad quarters quarter over quarter, that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that some changes have to be made either from how we engage our customers, how we attract our customers, or how we operate efficiently. There's really only so many things you can do when you're losing money hand over fist.
Right.
And no preventable surprises.
Right. Well, I only wish layoffs only happened when you were losing money and not to increase margins when you're profitable.
True.
But that doesn't happen either. So,
right.
But there's things you can't, for confidentiality, you can't talk about. but there are things you can prepare for. Yeah, no, but that's exactly it. It's just being open and honest with each other. And that's trust, right? High trust relationships with your employees are huge. And there's studies on that, too. High trust relationships with employees, employers, those companies supposedly show a 50% more profitability. Again, that's like a McKinsey study. So you have to build that trust. But when you're not telling people stuff, and if you're just giving it to them at the end and then just you got to accept it, people are not going to trust you and that you're looking out for the best interest. You're looking out maybe for the bottom line, which you have to do. I mean, that's part of your responsibility. I get it. But that is important stuff to consider. And yeah, you can't always do it. That's certainly for sure.
I'm a big believer that happy employees leads to happy customers, and happy customers leads to great market perception. And great market perception means you're going to outpace your competition. So it all comes back to that trust element that you just mentioned.
Right. And it's going to show. I don't care how good you are, unless you've had some great acting lessons. It shows up every day, right? I had to run client meetings and I'd have to bring my teams together. And that was my job, team, accounting team. Da, 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 da. When I was on the investment side, it was the investment. It could be an investment manager, a product manager, the investment operations people. It's the same thing. You got to bring everybody together and put on your happy face. But if you don't have a happy face, it's going to show, because teams would show up. Look, they're overworked. They're understaffed. They've got too much going on, and they show up to the meeting and they're not prepared. You know why? Yeah. Because they're too goddamn busy, because they just got off back-to-back-to-back-to-back calls. They haven't prepared for this client meeting because they're on back-to-back-to-back-to-back calls.
Right. You haven't given them the time to be prepared and on message.
Be prepared. And then you'd like to have maybe an internal meeting before the call. Well, you can't always do that because they're so goddamn busy, because then they have to do their work. And so people show up and they, I don't know, I'll look into it. I don't know, I'll look into it. You know? And you can just tell they're not prepared. Or you had a meeting last week and they asked you to do something and they said, did you do this for me? Did you compare plan A versus plan B? Now I got to do that for you.
Yeah. No, that's never something you want to say to your customer.
That's right. So it shows. It shows. And one of the things I was just talking about last week was, you know, you keep metrics and KPIs. And they say, well, you met your metric and your KPI. What's wrong? The client should be green. They should be happy. How did you get there?
Right.
Because with what I just told you, if you got there and you're having those meetings that are frustrating and their efforts, and the client clearly sees that the team is either frustrated, overworked, they're not all there, you get to the end goal and you get it done in the end, you had a push, but it was frustrating to get there. Are you really green? You met your KPI and you met your metric, but it was a pain to get there. That's not good either, you know?
100%. Yes. I think back to a comment we had in the beginning of the episode. Is that KPI for you, or is that for your customer? Is it actually something that reflects the customer experience and your growth opportunities, or is that some internal metric that someone came up with because it made them happy and feel good?
Yeah, true. You got to be careful what I call metrics myopia, being too focused, and I'm a high myope. I can't see anything without my context. You can't be too focused on the metric, right? You got to manage the relationship and the experience, not the metric, because people will game any metric that's out there. No matter what it is. And like, I love to tell the story. My wife used to work part-time at Crate and Barrel. Whatever their return policy was, somebody would try to game it. She had some woman bring in a spatula from 1994 once to return it or something, right? So you've got to be super careful. And so that's why your metrics, right? They have to be measurable, tangible results that are based on what the client needs are, not necessarily yours. I will say this, though, your client meetings, okay, are always an opportunity to manage that relationship as well and manage the client as well, because they have a part, especially what I did, they have a part in it, too. Unfortunately, there is a lot of work that clients need to do on the investment side of the business, and you can't always make it a completely effortless experience. There's stuff they got to do, too. So you need to manage that communication flow and that operational flow between them as well. And then so your client meetings are an opportunity to do that, you know, manage the metrics, the KPIs, and then how the operational flow or the experience is going for everybody.
Yes, 100%. Gary, as we kind of wrap up this conversation, I want you to think about anyone that you've met who you really think is changing the game when it comes to how we build relationships with customers, whether it's someone you've met on your podcast, your childhood best friend, or, you know, someone you aspire to know. Who is leading the charge?
There's a lot out there. I just want to thank all my guests again, because the people I had on are leading the charge. That's why I had them. I've been thrilled to have the people I've had on there. They've been unbelievably amazing. So I'm going to give you two names. One just went out. I just asked Jeannie Walters to be on my show. She's amazing. If you, I she just did a LinkedIn Live yesterday that I joined. She is succinct, to the point, full of information, quick, but not too fast. It gives great data metrics and just has a great approach to applying this customer experience mentality to whatever industry you're in. So I just threw that one out there. But another person I want to get out there to is Ian Golding. He's based out of the UK and he's a CX consultant. And I've heard him on podcasts for years and he's absolutely fabulous. And I think he has a background very similar to mine, where he has worked in large organizations and large financial services organizations. And he's felt some of that frustration of being the one who you feel like you're the only one going, everything is not awesome. Like, everybody's out there singing, everything is awesome. And I'm not going to sing on your podcast because I want to do that to you, but everything is not awesome. And you have to raise your hand sometimes. And you might, that might not be the best thing to do sometimes. So I think he's been in that kind of boat, but his approach is, I think, in such lockstep in tune with the way I see things. I think he'd be great for my show. So I think he's great as well.
All right, well, we will put out into the universe that you will get Ian on your show. I do follow Jeannie on LinkedIn. She is incredible and has great content. So
Yeah.
we'll definitely put out into the universe that Jeannie's episode goes well and that Ian joins you on your podcast as well. That being said, if someone's really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want more of Gary, where should they go? Where can they find you online?
You could certainly find me on LinkedIn. It's Gary with one R, Mara with two R's, MARRA. My website is maracxhub.com. And my podcast is Your Customer, Your Success. That's on any podcast platform, all the major platforms. There's a page on the website, and it's also on YouTube. I do videos as well, and videos are coming out real great as well. So I enjoy actually doing the video editing, believe it or not, even though it does take quite some time.
Well, thank you so much, Gary, for joining us on the Growth Signal. It was a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.